Item 5, from the Director, Department of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, submitting an informational report on the current status of Estabrook Dam. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Healy, welcome.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors. With me today is Don Perung, a professional engineer with AECOM, our consultant on this project. I appreciate your patience. We were just here last cycle giving you an update on some of the things happening on the river today. What we'd like to do is focus on the dam in particular. We've been making some progress with an environmental analysis, so if you'll bear with me, we'll try to run through this, and then if you have questions, I'll be more than happy to try to address them. The image you see on the screen is a picture of half of the dam approximately. This is what we'll refer to as the gated section. On the left is county parkland. We own the entire east bank of the river at that point. You see the guillotine-style gates that can be raised to allow flows to move through it or else close to raise the level or the impoundment upstream of the dam. And then on the very right edge, you'll see an island. It looks like land, but there's an island there that's owned by the Bureau of Land Management. And to the east, then off to the right, is also what's known as the fixed crest spillway section that connects with the land on the west bank where we have no ownership. Myself and Don Perung here today. We're going to move right on to the background. Estabrook Dam was built in the late 30s. It was part of a WPA-CCC project. Basically, we had a design in plan for the entire Estabrook Park. It involved development for a lot of roads, bridges, other structures. There was issues upstream historically with flooding, particularly in spring as the ice would come off of the river and debris would move downstream. People complained about it for a long time. Finally, in the late 30s, it was decided that they were going to do something about it. So the city and the county initiated a flood control project on the river. We'll talk about it a little bit more. But as a part of that, on the tail end, the dam itself was actually built. In the location where the dam sits, actually probably just a little bit upstream, originally was a series of limestone bedrock ledges that exposed themselves, rapids, if you will. And they have the effect of backing water upstream, actually creating a little bit of a pool. But, of course, they were also a source for backing up water when we were trying to move the river in flooding events, and it caused some problems. So the rock outcropping was actually quarried out and removed. Stone was used to build roads, bridges. Some of the buildings, the Lincoln Blatt's building, were all utilizing the Niagara limestone that's native to the area. The rock outcrop was a fixed structure. It was removed, quarried down well below bedrock, and instead we built a dam with some gates with the intention that we'd be able to fluctuate the water levels and operate them a little bit. Takes us forward to 2009. We were given an administrative order by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources requiring us to do repairs to the dam. There were several structural things and some maintenance, if you will, items that needed to be done. They gave us a repair order saying fix these things or remove the dam, one or the other. The structural improvements we can talk about briefly, but basically we've got a system structure built in the late 30s. It has some structural issues, cracking concrete, spalling, patches that need to happen. The gates are constantly in a need of repair in that they slide up and down, so they need to be cleaned, repainted, lubricated, hung, made to work. There are 10 gates, and they're all operable remotely electrically with large motors that turn screws and can raise and lower them, but they do require a fair amount of maintenance. In 2010, we hired AECOM to do the required structural investigation, basically update what we knew about the dam. They looked at all of the features of it, went through sort of the DNR checklist, if you will, and helped us develop plans and specifications to do the repairs for the dam. And basically we're at that point. Those plans are finished, complete. We've submitted them to the Department of Natural Resources for their review and approval, trying to move forward. One of the few comments that the DNR had with our plans is that you remember me mentioning the Bureau of Land Management Island. That's not under county ownership. The East Bank is. The entire West Bank is under private ownership. So a good portion, two-thirds of the dam and its related structures are actually sitting on other people's properties. one of the things that we don't have going back from the 30s is access agreements to get in and do these maintenance and repair activities on the West Bank and the island. So the DNR pointed out to us that we needed those approvals from the property owners currently to go in and do the immediate work, and also would need permanent access rights to be able to do future maintenance and repair if we were going to operate the structure. We have reached out to all the private property owners on the West Bank, and in particular in conjunction with the river cleanup project we spoke of last time, we'll need the same access there. They are prepared to give us the temporary and permanent rights we need. The complication came in when we approached the Bureau of Land Management. We met with them, showed them our plans, talked about what we wanted to do. They were very receptive. They said basically the process is here's a permit application. You submit, fill it out, get it to us. We did that. The comments they came back with is we understand what you're trying to do. We have a little bit of concern in that this is federal property and we need to comply with the National Environmental Policy Act. So we would request that you do an environmental analysis, which I'll refer to, Don Will, as an EA. It basically goes in and looks at all of the different opportunities, problems, threats that exist with the dam, and tries to look at it from multiple perspectives. I will say that while we've been working on this the last couple of years, a lawsuit has been filed against the county and is still pending from the Milwaukee Riverkeeper, asking the judge to determine that, in fact, it's a public nuisance and that the county does not take proper care of it and therefore it should be removed. That's still pending. We have moved on with the environmental assessment. We are mostly through that process. We're going to sort of talk about where that's where we've been and where that's taken us right now. And as we talked last month, we are still on track with the Wisconsin DNR and the United States Environmental Protection Agency to do the second phase of the river sediment cleanup. The intention being it's really independent of the work we need to do on the dam, but it does need to be gone in order to access the back sides of the dam. So we are moving forward. That's under contract with us and the federal state governments. So that will be moving forward. That gives us then the opportunity to do whatever it is we need to with the dam. Acronyms. Try to get you through this. NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act. WEPA is the Wisconsin equivalent of it. Basically, what we're doing is going and looking at the dam as it exists and the different alternatives for it, how we might repair it, utilize it, modify it, and most importantly, operate it. We've assembled a technical team I spoke a little bit of last time, working closely with the Department of Natural Resources, Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which has been gracious enough to provide us with some grant monies to address fish passage issues, regardless of what we do, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So that's the technical advisory team. We've met several times to basically pull together the different alternatives, identify them, put the draft copy of the environmental assessment together, which Don's firm is taking the lead on coalescing that whole thing. So we've had a lot of meetings to talk about these alternatives. Sewer PAC has been instrumental in running the floodplain modeling of the entire river in whatever we do. And Don's going to talk about the criteria that we actually look at in the environmental analysis. But whatever we do, one of the largest concerns we have is that our actions at the dam do not increase the risk of flooding upstream. I'm sure that's something we can all appreciate. So that's sort of the number one overriding criteria is to not make anything worse. If there are opportunities to make things better, we're certainly going to flesh those out and see where they're at. So we've gone through that process, I think, pretty much. I will share with you, and we're not going to get into the detail of the technical results of the sewer pack modeling, but they went in and updated the model. They do the modeling for all of southeastern Wisconsin, all municipalities, the major rivers. They're the keepers, if you will, of the floodplain models, which can predict what happens under different scenarios. We asked them to help us with this. They collected all of the data, the most current data that we could on elevations, storm sewer outfalls, everything that they could. They updated the model, put all those parameters into it, and then it puts them in a situation where they can actually say what if, and they can plug in different scenarios and see how that affects water upstream and downstream. So that was a very important part of it. We're not going to get into the detailed science of it, but it has led us, as we've identified alternatives and go through the filtering process to decide which of those aren't worth pursuing and which are. It allowed us to do several different critiques, I guess, if you will. The first and foremost being, what impact does it have on upstream flooding potential? So from there, I think, Don, you're going to take over, and he's going to walk us through the things that we look at in doing an environmental analysis.
So the first is to address all the various alternatives to the dam. You know, we've got on one extreme we have repair the dam. On the other extreme, we have take the dam out. Well, how about some compromises to these things? And those are the ones that we looked at. So we can provide a whole array of different alternatives to the county, as well as to the agencies and to the public. We can pick the best one. That's our objective. And then we evaluate these alternatives based on the NEPA and WEPA, which are the national and Wisconsin criteria. And what we also solicit public input. We had a scoping meeting on June the 5th, very well attended. Probably about 100 people showed up, packed house. There was standing room only. It was pretty neat. And the people that came, they're passionate. Very, very passionate. And that's something really to admire. They're passionate on this side, they're passionate on that side. So to satisfy everybody, it's going to be a real challenge. From a personal standpoint, I'm also a local boy. I grew up on Silver Spring and Green Bay Avenue, and a lot of fun memories about Lincoln Park, Fletch Park, Estabrook Park. So it's kind of neat. And in a way, at the meeting, it seemed like a receiving line, because I knew a lot of the people from the neighborhood. So it was neat. So the criteria, these are the general areas of the criteria. There's physical changes, there's the affected environment. The environment can be affected in so many different ways, and this evaluation assesses that. And then to what extent is it being impacted? And then are there environmental consequences? And then you evaluate what the significance of these consequences all are, and then you summarize the information based on the various alternatives. And here are the criteria. It's a full array of criteria in terms of there's biology, there's fish, there's microorganisms, there's people, there's the social element of it, there's the economic element from property values to aesthetics to archaeological. So it's a whole spectrum of things. Water depth is important because one of the things that was brought out in these meetings and in earlier discussions is people love the impoundment. Well, some love the impoundment. And those that love it, they want to use it for recreation. They want to have boating capabilities. And so those were important criteria. So from those two spectrums, rehabbing the dam or abandoning the dam, we came up with alternatives 3A, 4, which are compromised things. It's building an impoundment. It's sort of a natural type system called a rock ramp. And we'll get into more specifics, and we have some pictures of those. And then we have the abandoning of the dam itself and upgrading the dam. And rehabbing the dam, there's some structural things that need to be done. And one of the other alternatives that's sort of a sub-component of rehabbing the dam is adding fish passage. And what that basically means is you provide a means for the fish, you keep the dam, you provide a means for the fish to migrate in a segment of the dam so that they can go to spawn and be more of a natural environment. So as Kevin mentioned earlier, there are these components to the dam. There's the gated section towards the top of the picture. There's icebreakers. The purpose of the icebreakers, as the name implies, when large pieces of ice come down, that breaks up the ice so that it doesn't damage the gates. There's the island in the middle, and then there's the overflow spillway section, or fixed crest. It looks sort of, it's kind of neat. It looks like the original land and stone. I'm sure it was a stone that they mined out, and they developed a kind of a nice little meandering wall to create sort of a natural environment there. And aesthetically, it's very, very nice. You can see in the middle of that fixed area, though, overflow spillway section, there's a lot of debris in there, and that's been known to happen, and that's a maintenance thing that goes with the territory if you're going to have a dam.
And if I might, if you kind of look at the shading in the river, just to the lower right of where it says upstream pool, you can see some lighter gray areas in there. That's the contaminated sediment that we're going after in phase two that has accumulated over the years. It's basically behind the overflow section and then runs along the lower left along that shoreline there.
So we included this slide to show you just what the structural condition is in some elements of the dam. Overall, the dam is in pretty good shape, but there's some things, you know, it's 75 plus years old and it just needs a little attention. And so we've incorporated into the design structural improvements to correct those matters and extend the life of the dam for about 20 years. Debris management is a key element in the operating cost that the county needs to consider. This has been something that the county has dealt with for the last 75 plus years. There's times when you get a huge amount of debris that can accumulate, and then somebody needs to come in and remove that material. This is sort of a before and after shot. I was there the day that there was a huge storm, like basically it was a 100-year flood. And I remember there was a manhole cover that was literally flying up in the air. It was about a foot and a half off the top, just by the pressures of all the water going into these storm sewers. And the end result is the vast majority of that debris you saw there just adios right over the top of that fixed crest area and sailed downstream, floated downstream. But this is something to keep in mind. There's the debris management end of it, which is an operating cost. And then there's also, as Kevin had indicated, the SewerPAC people had done a very nice job looking at water levels, flood conditions, and evaluated the dam under a whole scenario of different flow events. Average flows, median flows, and then flood flows, a 5-year, a 10-year, 15, 10, 20, 50, and 100. And in a 100-year flood, what's important is when SewerPAC evaluates that, it's based on the gates being open. That's a real important element. So all the gates are open, and it it carries the flood flows, and everything is fine. But if those gates were closed, it actually can impact upstream property owners and result in the 100-year flood being exceeded by about a foot and a half in certain areas. So that's a huge consideration. It's a high liability for the county. And what it means, if the dam is going to be there, it's important that somebody's going to operate the dam, the gates of the dam, during major flood events.
Another interesting point is what you see of the dam structure there, that and the gates. In a 100-year storm event, that's a 1% probability, meaning you should really only get a storm like that every 100 years. These structures are completely submerged. The water moves up and over and around them, and they're basically speed bumps in the river.
Mm-hmm. So this is our first alternative, rehabilitating the dam, structural improvements, upgrading the gates. There's some minor tree removal along the just adjacent to the dam itself, and that's more structural, geotechnical oriented. The county board had voted to implement this alternative in 2010. There is the need to address these federal and state regulations and address alternatives, and that's what's currently ongoing. And then there's a subcategory of this alternative, which is to add fish passage. Another picture of the dam itself. The second alternative is on the other extreme of this, of the first one, that being we abandon and remove the dam. It restores the river to a free-flowing condition. Under normal flow, it would be similar to what we have existing, which is a good perspective for the people, the public. What does it mean? What happens if there's no dam? Well, it's basically what you have right now. And that condition's been existing since about 2009, since there's been no adjustment to the gates.
With the dam gates open.
Right. The gates are all open. So under flood flows, the river levels would be lower than with the dam, with your current dam and the gates open. Sediment would not accumulate. It's a big advantage. Eliminates the impoundment upstream, which to a number of people upstream, that's a big, big consideration. Some love it, some hate it. Provides for kayaks, canoes, but no boats. the aesthetics of a free-flowing river, that can be, again, viewed as a very positive situation. Another important consideration is there's no annual operation and maintenance costs, which results in substantial savings to the county. That's a big consideration. And it's also the least costly of all the alternatives. But there's also the other element of it, there's no more impoundment. And to some, that's a big consideration. You also provide fish passage with this option. So there's always pluses and minuses, and that's what we're evaluating in these alternatives. This alternative number three, this is the idea of having a rock ramp, and this is a very natural type approach. I'll show you a picture in a little bit. This ramp would be located about 1,600 feet upstream, and the reason why that location was selected is a little narrower there, so it's less costly to build a ramp. It provides fish passage, similar to a natural river with a series of pools and riffles. Sediment buildup, you can expect some sediment buildup over time, but over time we're talking, you know, maybe 10, 20 years. So it's long term, similar to it having a dam. Capital costs are about mid-range. They're more than if you remove the dam, but they're less than if you upgraded the dam. Annual operating and maintenance costs are substantially less than with a dam. There is a need for debris removal. I have a call into a gentleman that works for the Minnesota DNR had actually written a book strictly on these rock ramps and implementation, and that's in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Canada. And I have a call into him based on some of the questions that we received during the public scoping meeting. The public raised a number of questions. Is there a need to go back in and rearrange these rocks if you get ice flows and they move the rocks around? So some of these rocks are the size of this table or half the size of this table. They're sizable rocks. So anyways, I'm going to give a little more insight from a technical standpoint what his thoughts are on some of those matters. We looked at a couple different size heights of ramps, and the reason is we wanted to maximize the impoundment behind this rock ramp and yet meet all the different criteria in terms of 100-year flood flows and things. So we first looked at a 5-foot high ramp, but we're eliminating that one because it actually would result in a 100-year flood that was greater than the existing conditions. So that's been that's a DNR criteria. So that 5-foot ramp is not a feasible one at that location. Then we looked at a 4-foot high ramp, and that one is feasible. That one, the 100-year flood elevations would be below or at what the current 100-year flood elevations are. So that's a viable option. Here's a kind of a pictorial view of what, when we say a rock ramp, what is it? So it's a series literally of rocks. In this particular case, we take some of the construction concrete from removal of the dam and use that for developing some of this ramp. And then in addition, natural stones. These stones, as shown on the top of the picture here, they're 3 foot to 6 foot diameter. Large stones, and there's a kind of a filtering type approach there, and it's a very effective way to do it. And this was a picture from that gentleman's technical book, and he works for the Minnesota DNR.
And we'll look at a couple of the difference in the height when we talk about these alternatives.
Yeah.
Is how much higher it raises the water on the upstream side of that structure.
Exactly. So naturally, this is how that would look. So you see there's a series of pools and riffles, and so it's a very natural-looking situation. Alternative 4, after we had done alternative 3 and we saw what kind of water levels we could get for this impoundment, the SWRPAC people said, you know, let's take another shot at another option. And this one is modifying the existing dam. And this one is 6.3 feet high, and you say, well, you said the 5 wasn't going to work. How do you do a 6? Well, the reason the 5-foot high ramp was further upstream, and when we get by where the dam is itself, the water is deeper. So the end result is, at this location, a 6.3 foot high ramp is doable hydraulically, from a 100-year flood standpoint, it's doable. It's well within the DNR criteria, meets the 100-year flood elevation requirements. And how we'd accomplish it, that is remove the 10 gates, provides a natural setting, provides an impoundment that's deeper than the other rock ramp that we looked at. It is classified as a dam in the eyes of DNR, but those criteria, it's pretty straightforward. It means that there's an inspection required every 10 years. There's some other emergency type criteria that you need to address, but all those criteria can be accomplished. It has less operating costs than having a dam. It's also less capital costs than having a dam. It is similar to the 4-foot ramp, but with a deeper impoundment. So those are all positives, and it also provides fish passage. This alternative 5, no action. This is one alternative that is standard protocol whenever you're looking at options. You say, well, what happens if we don't do anything? And what that would mean is that we'd be violating DNR's 2009 administrative order to repair or abandon the dam. It violates the Milwaukee River Keeper's suit that says take action because they view the dam as a public nuisance. And they also give the latitude to the county that either you remove the dam or you repair the dam. There is that latitude in that suit. This could lead to more structural issues with the dam. The dam would get more dilapidated. No impoundment is possible. And for all those reasons, that option has been eliminated from further consideration. The other issue that we looked at was alternative 6, which was a new dam. And the price for a new dam is substantially more than to repair the dam, so that was eliminated as well. So the feasible alternatives are rehabilitating the dam and adding fish passage, abandoning or removing the dam, having a rock ramp that'd be at least, that would be 4 feet high, or the alternative 4, modify the existing dam, provide a 6.3 feet high rock ramp, and this is a table that the SewerPAC people provided us. And when I mentioned about impoundments, well, what type of impoundments are we currently getting? You know, that's an important criteria. So SewerPAC did a very nice job at looking at various segments upstream. The impact, the impoundment aspects of the dam reach as far as West Bender Road. So West Bender Road's about a mile north of Silver Spring in the vicinity of Bayshore. And with the dam, the depth of the water under what median flow, median is basically your normal flow in layman's terms. That flow is about 2.4 to 5 feet deep. So you can boat on it. Aesthetically, it works out well, things like that. If we remove the dam, that water level would be about a foot and a half to 2 feet. Remove the dam. So basically, the idea of boating would be eliminated. You could do kayaking, canoeing. So there, it's again pros and cons for that type of thing. The alternative 3, which was roughly a five-foot dam, that one was eliminated because it impacted the 100-year flood, so that was ruled out. 3A was a 4-foot high ramp. That the depth of water would be about a foot and a half to 2.5 feet. So it's better than just removing the dam, but the depth still isn't all that great. And then alternative 4, again, would be the compromise, where the depth of water would be 1.9 feet to 3.8 feet, which isn't quite as deep as if you had the dam, but it's enough to enhance the recreational elements of it.
Don, quick question that's occurred to me. What would happen to the average width of the river were the dam to have been removed? North Avenue is the example where it considerably narrowed.
Right.
And
right.
It seemed deepened, although what you're telling us is that that's not likely.
Right.
It would actually
right.
become shallower. But
right.
we
right.
see the...
It's right. When they removed the dam at North Avenue, they removed a part of the dam and they kept a part of the dam in place. And it is deeper there. In the case of at Esterbrook, where the dam is located is a very wide expanse of the river. and so it'll, if you remove the dam, it'll remain shallow in that region.
But would it narrow, I guess, is...
It would depend on flows. How much rain was coming into the system, how long it had been since rain. Generally, the water level would go down and some of the lines would pull back, but the banks would still be the same width at the point where the dam is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That helps.
And maybe it's helpful just to look at the top row and the bottom row with the alternatives 1 and 1A. That's the dam being there with the gates closed. That shows how much, generally, on average, we can raise the water levels for recreational purposes. None of the ones in the middle do much for that, or they exacerbate it, but alternative 4, if you're looking at the range of depths, are very similar. So the difference being is that 1 is kept that way using a series of automated gates that open and close and have to be handled. Alternative 4 is a passive system, if you will. There's no controls on it. It's just done with structural elements to the correct elevations. And I would like to just briefly touch on Fish Passage because that's been a bit mischaracterized. That is not one of the primary goals of this project. Again, we're trying to deal with the dam. The existing dam does create a barrier to fish passage. The only fish that are able to get through typically are the trout and salmon. That's if we have sufficient gates open at the time that they're making their run, they can get up and over and past it. All the native fishes are trapped below the dam and can only find their way into the river from upstream. And one of the issues that has also been brought up is that the dam actually helps is creating a barrier to invasive fish species, things that we don't want in there, lamprey, eels, some of the carp that are invading all over. That's not an issue. The DNR has looked at that. And when I mentioned before that in a 100-year event or even some less, the dam is completely submerged, so invasive fish can get past it. There are places upstream where they're limited, but no matter what we do here, dam in, dam out, the invasive species will always have the opportunity to get past this barrier. The ones that can't get through now are the natives. So we look at fish passage as a value added on several of the alternatives. And as I indicated, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has offered us some grant monies to help fund those. So it's something that we can easily enough, while we're in there, do add a value to whatever solution we come up with. And now we've helped to accommodate fish passage for multiple reasons. But a lot of people have mischaracterized that, saying that's what we're trying to do. It's something that helps make the river better.
My assumption is that NEPA is a definition of best practices for all practical purposes. And does that seem to suggest endorsing one of these options over others?
Well, it's a balancing act. You have to look and evaluate all the criteria, and I guess only those making the judgment can make that call as to what best suits the needs, the fiscal package, the recreational benefits thereof. It's a tough decision, and there's often no one straightforward answer. One of the reasons that we're doing the EA, we could have done the outreach and looked at alternatives absent it, but it was one of the requirements that Bureau of Land Management brought to us and said, if we're to let you on our land to do whatever the plan is, we need you to look at all these alternatives so that we can face the public and say, we've looked at all of the effects, the pros and the cons, and we think that your solution, this is okay or this one isn't. So they'll have an opportunity to weigh in, because if they don't like the solution we're advancing, it's their land and they don't have to give us permission to do it, and we cannot do repairs. We can't do any of these alternatives without access to the island.
Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this report actually is elucidating on a lot of points. We haven't met, sir, but I come from the south side, where this is kind of a foreign territory. Mm-hmm. So the Estabrook Beer Garden has changed that. The one thing you said earlier is taking no action, you said, is not the same as removing the dam. They're not the same things.
They're not the same thing. Right.
They'd have different outcomes.
Right. They're different.
Yeah. Okay. That was an interesting point. I don't deal with this even on a monthly basis, but I was curious. You know, if we do nothing, then that would mean that, well, the dam would further deteriorate, and there would be problems that would stem from that.
Exactly.
And if I may, it's a direct violation of the order we're under with the DNR, which says fix it or remove it. Doing nothing is not the same as removing it. Removing it means it's hydraulically neutral. All remnants are gone that would back up water, and you go back to natural. So we really don't have the option of do nothing.
Okay. Of course, we'll see what the budget says, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I don't think anybody's brought it up, and maybe it's not that important, but this past winter, the snowfall totals was the largest it's been in at least 20 years, okay? And obviously, that eventually melts, okay? And was there anything in the work that you've done that we saw some things? I mean, it was an unusual snow season for us from a flooding standpoint, and I was just curious if that has been part of any kind of package or alternative that you've looked at.
I can address that, I think. Mm-hmm. The hydraulic model tries to look at all parameters of the river. We can focus in at certain points in time and events, but they look at the entire season. So every spring, regardless of how severe the winter is, we get large surges in water elevations as the snow and ice upstream melt, and it's finding its way through here. One of the larger problems in spring is actually the ice that comes with it, large chunks of ice that tend to bang into the shore, scour, if they get an opportunity to pile up against the structure, can cause damage, and actually, as we've all seen, have the effect of raising water elevations. So it gets back to part of why this whole project, if you will, started in the 30s. It was that concern in spring, whether it was a good or a bad winter. There was too much water trying to get through the system. We were looking at a very flat part of the river, it being flat, just upstream. There were significant meanders in. Flows didn't move through. Debris and ice would all pile up. So it exacerbated flooding upstream. So one of the goals, and it's often been stated that this is a flood control dam, and it's not. It's there to actually create an artificial impoundment for recreation purposes. The flood improvement project was actually straightening the river. We took the bends out of it. We cut through and created a wider, broader channel just upstream to move that water. And then the whole river bed, if you will, from the island, the Oxbow areas, down to the dam was lowered on a magnitude of 7 to 12 feet. So they actually quarried down the bottom of the river. And further north, the bedrock disappears, and there's actually sediments in there. So the problem was really caused by the bends in the river. Now those are there. They've been carved, but there's a direct channel. So in spring, the waters move through. The dam is capable of passing almost any water that comes at it, and as I alluded to with the 100-year. If there's too much water, it just buries the dam. The water moves over. As the levels drop, it goes. What is problematic is debris, ice, and large impediments that can pile up against bridges or the dam itself, and then they immediately start backing up water. Now, the water can still move downstream sufficiently, but it's raising the elevation upstream, and that's what puts adjacent properties in peril of flood. So the 100-year floodplain was established based upon the average of how far it inundates in a 100-year flood. That's what people pay flood insurance on. Almost all of these, all of these scenarios bring that down, with the exception of having the dam in place and having the gates closed. If the gates are closed and we get a 100-year event, or actually a lesser event, it will cause flood level increases upstream. It doesn't pose any serious threats downstream. The water moves on through. Even dam failure wouldn't be catastrophic downstream. It's a low-hazard dam. It doesn't pose a threat to life and property, but it is there, and the effects of what happens. You asked specifically about this winter. It was a very severe winter. There was a lot of residents further upstream that were concerned about ice damming in the river as it was breaking up, and that was having the effect of raising the elevation. It's totally independent of the dam, and in fact, one of the concerns we have is when that material actually breaks up and starts moving downstream, that it could have significant impacts to the dam itself.
Any more for us?
We've been interrupting with
next step. Where we're at, I guess we can give you an update on that. As Don said, we just had a meeting with the public to show them the alternatives we had come up with, solicit their input, their questions, and see if there was other alternatives out there that we hadn't thought of. You know, we sort of kicked through this, starting with a few alternatives. Once we had the benefit of the hydraulic model, we could start looking at other options. We've sort of run out of them. This is what we've got. Nobody brought forth any additional suggestions at that meeting. So we've had public comments being taken on the internet, at the meetings. There's been a lot of ways that people can get their feedback to us. We'll take that information, we'll weave it into, we have a draft environmental assessment, which we'd say 90-95% there. The goal is now is to take the other public concerns and address them in that, weave them into the dialogue, and then modify all, I guess, the recommendations that come forward. So that is forthcoming within weeks probably. We'd like to clean that document up, weave in the public input, and then we'll be providing it to the Bureau of Land Management, and we'll be going to have another public meeting where people can comment on the EA itself. Up to date, we've been talking about what those options are and what we could do. Now the intention is that the EA will actually move forward and say, we have these alternatives, maybe this one's recommended for this reason or whatever. Ultimately, I guess the policy decision rests with this board. But what we're trying to do is provide the information and the answers. And we've gotten a lot of the science that we didn't have before. We now know where we're going and think we can answer the tough questions. The EA should have them all in there. So we're moving forward. Once that's done, we can provide it to the Bureau of Land Management. They can weigh in. They can decide to issue us a permit or not. And then we would move forward based upon that. Either way, the river cleanup proceeds. This is the point we're at with this, about 95%, I guess.
Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask that the committee be provided with a copy of the presentation, that it be added to the file, and I move to receive and place on file.
Perhaps for distribution to all of our colleagues so that they're well aware.
Yes.
The motion is to receive and place on file. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Supervisors Rainey.
Aye.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Staskunas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place on file prevails.
Well, thank you much for that presentation. That was enlightening.
Thank you for listening.
Item number 6, please.